Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Over the weekend, NASA launched an ambitious little probe named Lucy. In case you weren't awake at 5:30 a.m. on Saturday to watch it live, here's what it sounded like.
Status check.
Go Atlas.
Go Centaur.
Go Lucy.
7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0. Liftoff. Atlas V takes flight, sending Lucy to uncover the fossils of our solar system.
Tower clear.
RD-180 propellant utilization has gone to closed loop control. The vehicle has begun to pitch yaw roll maneuver. Now, 30 seconds into flight, vehicle is 0.6 miles in altitude, traveling at 939 miles per hour.
You go, Lucy. Those are the first steps of what will be Lucy's 12-year voyage to the neighborhood of Jupiter. Lucy will pass by Earth 3 times for a gravity boost, cross the asteroid belt 4 times, and get close enough for a good look at 8 massive space rocks that could tell us a lot about how the planets of our solar system came to be. You heard the broadcaster mention the fossils of our solar system. He's talking about those asteroids. That's NASA's most recent launch, and it has another 2 planned before the end of the year. The James Webb Space Telescope, which is the next generation of the Hubble. It has infrared capabilities that Hubble doesn't, which will give you a better picture of our universe than we've ever had. It launches in December. So in 2022 will be the year of many cool outer space photos, but just in case we ever find that Earth is on a collision course with an Armageddon-sized asteroid, NASA's going to do a test run that they plan to hurl a spacecraft into an asteroid passing near us to see what happens. Joining me now to talk about the Lucy mission and the James Webb Space Telescope. Yes, we know that's controversial. That's for another segment. And Project DART, as it's called, is Kate Howells, a space policy advisor at the Planetary Society. She is also author of the book called Space as Cool as F. Kate, thanks for coming back.
Hi, thanks for having me on the show again.
So before we get into some of Lucy's targets, what are the bigger questions that this mission is aimed at answering?
Well, like you said, it's really looking for these fossils of the solar system. So as a sort of backgrounder for folks who don't know the whole history of our solar system, the whole thing started as a big sort of coalescence of rock and dust that had formed elsewhere in the universe. And it kind of all came together enough that some of it clumped together, got big enough to form a star that, you know, eventually started burning. The rest of what was around that clump of gas and dust coalesced into planets. Some of it just stayed little chunks of rock, though, and that's what asteroids are. So they're left over from the formation of the solar system. So everything else that turned into a planet or a moon or the sun obviously sort of changed its formation. That process of coalescence altered it. But asteroids are more similar to what things were like in the very early days of the solar system. So by going and studying them, we can learn a lot about what things were like when the solar system was just starting to become what it is now.
Sort of going back to the solar system's roots?
Exactly, yes.
So what is Lucy's final destination?
That is a question with a really wonderful answer because it doesn't really have a final destination. It's going to pass by several asteroids over the course of about 6 years, 8 years, because the first one it'll reach will be in 2025 and the last one should be in 2033. And then after that, it'll just keep going in orbit around the sun. So all the asteroids that it's visiting are in the same orbit as Jupiter. They're actually incredibly far away from Jupiter itself because the orbit around the sun that Jupiter runs is about 3 billion miles long. So all these asteroids that Lucy's going to be visiting are in that same path, but not at all close to the planet. Usually when we send a space probe out to study a planet or a moon, there's some kind of plan to deorbit it. So when it's finished all of its science, something happens to it, like it'll burn up in the atmosphere of that planet, as we saw with the Cassini mission at Saturn. Lucy, however, is just going to keep going around the sun. It'll stop having particular, you know, mission objectives to look at things up close, but it'll just keep going. And it could presumably keep going for millions and millions of years. So one of the things that I love about this mission is that they've included on it a plaque that has motivational words, you know, things like speeches and poems and song lyrics from influential people from around the world, including the Beatles, whose name, song "Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds" is part of the reason that this mission is named Lucy. And the idea behind this plaque is that because this spacecraft will stay in the solar system, someday in the distant, distant future, when all records of human history are forgotten, but perhaps there's some humans left over who form a new civilization. You know, it's all very poetic and future-oriented and science fiction-y. Those future humans might detect that this spacecraft is out there and go and find it and then find this plaque and, you know, decode it into whatever their future language is and learn something about the humans of today. So it's this very poetic message in a bottle, time capsule kind of thing.
My guest is Kate Howells, the Planetary Society Communications Strategy and Canadian Space Policy Advisor and author of the book Space is Cool as F. So before, Lucy's going to have crossed the asteroid belt four times, at least. How much control does a craft like this have to avoid being hit? Is it dicey?
It's not dicey. The asteroid belt does have millions of asteroids in it, but it's over such a huge amount of space that they're very far apart. And we know where they are. We've gotten very good at tracking things in our solar system. So as much as, you know, in the movies you see, oh, we're going through the asteroid belt in our spaceship. We have to dodge all these asteroids that are really close together. That's not how it really works. They're all, you know, millions of miles apart. So there's no real risk there. I think they have a pretty safe path.
So Lucy will be swinging by Earth three times for three gravity assists. And I'm for anybody who's seen the movie Apollo 13 with Tom Hanks, it's when they kind of slingshot around the dark side of the moon. So that's what this gravity assist is like. Why does a mission like this need to lean into gravity assists?
So a mission like this uses gravity assists to speed up and to change its trajectory. So when you launch something into space and you set it on this course, it'll just keep going in a straight line unless something changes its course, because there's nothing in space to really slow you down or speed you up. You can use rockets, like boosters, to adjust your trajectory a bit. But if you really want to make a big adjustment, the best thing is to use a planet. So the way they do that is they go close to the planet enough to get caught a little bit by its gravity, nudged a little bit, and that slings it like around. It's hard to describe just with words without diagrams and all that, but it pulls it in just enough that it curves the direction that the spacecraft is traveling in around the planet a little bit. And then again, depending on the exact angle at which they approach the planet, and depending on whether they use additional booster blasts to change the trajectory even more, they can calculate exactly which direction this will spit the spacecraft out in. And it does speed it up. You can also use a gravity assist to slow a spacecraft down. The analogy that helps me wrap my head around it is if you were riding a bicycle on a racetrack and there was a car going faster than you, ahead of you, that you were able to hold on to for a second and then let go of, it would speed you up if it was going faster than you. Whereas if you were going in the opposite direction of the car and you grabbed it for a second, that would slow you down. Hmm. So you can go, if you approach a planet going in the same direction that planet is orbiting the sun, and you pass close enough to it that it kind of grabs you with its gravity for a second, it'll speed you up. And likewise, if you go the opposite direction that it's orbiting the sun, it'll slow you down. So orbital engineers will use this, you know, fact of physics to manipulate the trajectory of a spacecraft. And because Lucy is going to so many different locations, they have this very complicated trajectory that does rely on all these adjustments over the course of several years, as it swings by Earth in particular, to get it to all these different places that it needs to go.
Let's talk about the other upcoming mission, the launch of the James Webb Space Telescope, slated for launch on December 18th. This is where I do an audio asterisk. It should be noted that many people in the science community, including Scientific American, they know the name's controversial because Webb was, quote, was in part responsible for implementing what was by then federal policy, the purging of the LGBTQ individuals from the workforce. End of asterisk. Like I said, another conversation, but I did want to note it. Didn't want you to have to note it. Mm-hmm. All right. So this project to basically build a better Hubble telescope started in 96. It's what has been going on the past 25 years?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I would say that it's not so much that it's a better Hubble, it's that it's the next generation. It's the next thing, learning what we've learned from Hubble and applying that and advancing the technology. And a big part of why it took so long. I mean, James Webb was a project that was always 10 years away from launching. You know, no matter what year it was 10 years away from launching. And finally, we're seeing that it's actually happening in just a couple of months. The reason it took so long is that we were doing brand new things. So nothing like this has ever been built. This is new territory. So things take longer than you might expect. Costs overrun. And then the fact, too, that funding for NASA is political. So you know, we all understand how messy and slow and complicated political processes can be. So that affects things like big, ambitious space missions. But it will be worth the wait. I personally am very excited about this mission. I'm a huge Hubble Space Telescope fan. The imagery that we get, I mean, the science is fantastic, but the imagery is so important because it offers people a window into the solar system, or into the universe, I should say, that you don't need any scientific background to understand. Anybody can look at a picture from a space telescope of some spectacular nebula and appreciate how beautiful and magnificent and just unbelievable it is that that exists out there in the same universe that we live in. And Webb is going to do the same thing. It's going to show us new, beautiful sights. It's going to look deeper into space and therefore farther back in time, which is, we could spend a whole radio show just talking about how that works. But the farther away you're looking, you're seeing light that left its source longer ago, because light takes a while to get to us. So you're looking back into the early, early days of the universe. So much like Lucy's looking to early days of solar system, James Webb Space Telescope is going to look to the early days of the universe, you know, shortly after the Big Bang. There's just so much we can learn, and it's just going to be beautiful, beautiful imagery.
Let's talk about some of the challenges for the telescope. There are scientists who rely on these telescopes. They've been concerned about SpaceX's Starlink project and other mega constellations of satellites out there in the orbit. They're worried the skies are blanketed with this stuff and they might have a hard time seeing past them to galaxies and other corners of the universe worth studying. As our orbital space gets more and more crowded, how important a resource are space telescopes like the James Webb?
Very important, because yes, that tens of thousands of Starlink satellites entering orbit in the coming years, that is definitely a big concern for anybody who's trying to do ground-based astronomy, so looking through telescopes on Earth. James Webb Space Telescope is going to be 1.5 million kilometers away, so it's not going to be bothered by Starlinks. Those are going to be very close to Earth. So something like Hubble or Webb or any other space telescope that are out there, because there's a few as well, they are able to look past, or not even have to look past, they're far enough away that they don't have to deal with satellites, they don't have to deal with light pollution, they don't have to look through the atmosphere. They're just getting the most clear, unobstructed view you could imagine of space. So it's definitely a huge resource for anyone who wants to study anything beyond our own planet.
Before I let you go, I have to ask you about this other mission, which sounds like something out of the sci-fi movie. It's supposed to launch in November. It's called DART, or Double Asteroid Redirection Test. Basically, they're going to hurl a spacecraft at an asteroid that's passing close to Earth to see how much they can get it to change its trajectory. In all seriousness, how closely are we looking at these objects, like they might pose a threat to Earth? What is the point and the purpose of this exercise?
Yeah, so this is an extremely important exercise because currently, whereas movies like Armageddon would have you think that if we found an asteroid that was going to demolish the Earth and it was going to hit in about 2 weeks, that we could just launch some asteroids and or astronauts up and blow it up and it would be fine. That's not true. If something were coming towards Earth that was big enough to cause serious damage, like the asteroid that killed all the dinosaurs, for example, or even ones like the meteor that exploded over Chelyabinsk in Russia about a decade ago, those kinds of impacts do happen. And if something were coming even just a year away, like it was going to hit in a year, we don't have anything ready to deal with that, to deflect it, to prevent it hitting the Earth. So DART is a mission that's testing a technology, just an approach that we could use in the future, which is, as crazy as it sounds, smashing into the asteroid to nudge it. The thing is, you don't want to do this when the asteroid is 2 weeks away from hitting Earth, because you're not going to be able to move its trajectory that much. But if you can slightly adjust a trajectory, just a tiny little bit, say 20 years in advance, that's enough to knock it off course, so that, you know, further on down the line, down its trajectory, it'll miss the Earth. And luckily, we do have a lot of spacecraft and ground-based observers looking for asteroids, finding them, tracking their trajectories around the sun, and calculating whether they will, at any point in the next, you know, hundreds of years, cross paths with the Earth's orbit at the same time as the Earth and hit us. We don't know of any asteroids that are going to be hitting the Earth anytime soon, which is, to me, a little bit amazing. Mm-hmm. That, you know, the number of asteroids that are out there, none of them are on a collision course. That's fantastic. But if we ever do find one, most likely we'll find it with lots and lots of lead time. But in any case, we need to know what we're going to do about it when we find it, because we're going to see if this DART mission works. It's going to hit, it's actually a binary asteroid system. So it's a small asteroid with an even smaller one orbiting it, like a moon. So we're going to hit the moon, which is so small that it'll, you know, even this relatively small spacecraft hitting it should affect its path around the bigger asteroid. And then we can track exactly what happened. Does it act the way that we think it will, just based on our physics calculations? Or is something else at play that we might not be aware of? So we have to demonstrate these kinds of technologies.
Kate Howells is a space policy advisor at the Planetary Society. She's also the author of the book, Space is Cool as the F-Bomb. Kate, thanks for being with us.
Thanks very much. Always a pleasure.